This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we're going to be talking about something that is not talked about enough anymore. This world we live in, I mean our world of Dreamland and all the other shows, Area 52, etc., etc., is a world now of will disclosure happen or not? Okay, I get it. We are going to definitely be staying in that space from time to time. But there are things about us that we really need to focus on. Things that we are going past. We think, oh, I know all about that. Forget it. I can't do it. I can, etc. There's a miracle here. And today we're going to be talking about some things about that miracle that you probably don't know with someone who knows a great deal about them. Von Brashler is with us, and Von has been thinking about and working on and the idea of lucid dreaming and how to make it work for you for a long time. Von, I'd like to welcome you to Dreamland.
Thank you, Whitley. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pleasure to be back with you too. Now, you've written this book about lucid dreaming. Why did you happen to do that? I'm curious.
Yes, well, I'd written a couple of earlier books on dreams, and mostly it seems that people are interested in the fascination of a dream. It's so exciting to talk about. It's entertaining. It's something that just seems to happen sporadically without a lot of thought or deep analysis. And I find that going back over the history of dream work, that civilizations for like at least 5,000 years have depended very much on the power of dreams as being prophetic, divine connection, inspiration, insight, very meaningful encounters where one apparently in a state of heightened consciousness steps outside and discovers something that's just not in our brain memory. And so based on my own experience with dreaming, and my fascination with the lucid dream, I embarked on a plan, a procedure, if you will, to develop steps whereby a person could actually enter lucid dreams and begin to mine this great field of exploration. Continuing dreams, returning to dreams, doing what the ancients called dream work. And it took me down a lot of rabbit holes, but I primarily went through what the people in Eastern spiritual science called yoga and consciousness training. And I found out there was a lot written and a lot to be learned from the East.
So, yeah, and this goes back in the history of the Western world as well. Yes. And someone like Terence McKenna would have said that it's related to the use of substances that release a lot of DMT
yes,
in the blood. But a lucid dream isn't it caused by a natural release of DMT in the body? Can you tell us a little bit about how lucid dreams set up in the body? How do they happen?
Yeah, I'm not the guest that could help you there. I'm sorry, I don't have a scientific training. I've looked at what research there is in dreams in the West. It seems to be kind of skewered toward what I like to call material reductionist philosophy, and I think that we're selling it short in that we can quantify it with measurements known to Western science. It is something quite different. It is consciousness, which is non-material. It is human empowerment, energy, which is non-material. And I think if we try to actually quantify it through material scientific methods, I think we're selling the process short. That's just my own take.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I asked the question, and I guess I framed it incorrectly because I wasn't asking for the scientific material about how dreams emerge. Let me go in a slightly different direction. Let's tell us the difference between common dreams and lucid dreams. That I
Yeah,
think that might be the best way to go with this.
that's certainly. Now, most of us have experienced what we call common dreams or very routine dreams. And these are sometimes called nightmare dreams or restless dreams. These are dreams of night sweats. They're dreams that come to you based on the fact that your physical side, your body, and your physical mind have not been really put to sleep during sleep time. And the mind, then, as a part of your physicality, just continues to grind away at concerns that you haven't been able to analyze and resolve in your waking moments. So in a sleepy state, we are still working on our problems and trying to develop new scenarios to analyze them and hopefully resolve them. This is a very common dream, and this is it's an insight to your psychology, and this is where people usually have their dreams analyzed psychologically. But a lucid dream is a dream where you're fully conscious of being in the dream. You're fully conscious in the dream. You have awareness. Conscious awareness in the dream, you're acting with great awareness, and you're in control of this dream.
Now, in control is an interesting word phrase because I've had lucid dreams. I don't have many, I will say that, but some of them have been extremely lucid, to say the least. And I've been able to move around in these worlds independently as if they were real, and maybe they are. What do you say to that? Could it be that sometimes these that part of our beings opens us up to other realities that we can actually enter?
Exactly. That's the point of why I've written any of these books is that in my next book we'll explore the subtle energy bodies that we have, looking at our emotional body or mental body or causal body or spiritual body, looking at the totality of our whole self being more than simply our physical nature. It is my understanding through research and personal exploration that we have consciousness, energized consciousness, existing on all levels of our total being, including our subtle energy bodies. Therefore, one can leave in a lucid dream. And when I say leave, I say that you're in an altered state. Of leaving the room where you're reclining, and you're actually going somewhere, and you're following a path that your subtle energy bodies, fully energized and conscious, have allowed you to go. Therefore, you can go to an astral plane, you can go to a mental plane, you can go to a causal plane, you can go to higher spiritual planes. And it is my belief then that most of us who don't explore dream work in this fashion are living just the tip of the iceberg of our total human potential.
Exactly. The we are less We are made to believe, or tricked into believing, that we are less than we actually are, and in part that's because of this absolutely amazing material world we live in, where it is so hard to see beyond the latest thing. You know, we're constantly addicted. We're all addicted to our phones now. Anyone who tells me they're not addicted to their phone doesn't have a smartphone. And you know, I'd like to not have a smartphone, but I can't get rid of it because I need it too badly in my life. So there we have it. Now, this is a the reason we're here. One of the many reasons we're here today is this is an escape hatch. This is an escape into a higher level of us, level of us that's much more important somehow or another than doom scrolling. Let's put it that way.
We're talking about parallel realities, parallel worlds, parallel universes, parallel existences. We're talking about the other aspects of you that most people don't explore. They just simply refuse to say there's anybody there. There's no other room outside this room. There's no presence for you there. There's no opportunity for you there. There's no there. And it's just simply not true. There are many aspects of us that need to be explored. The ancients could do it, going back to the Egyptians, the Babylonians, they could all explore it. The Greeks, the Romans, and then suddenly we come upon the age of reason and science. We say that, oh, only that can be what can be measured physically in terms of length and weight counts. It just isn't so.
Isn't there a kind of a long decline here, in the sense that the Egyptians and the Middle Eastern peoples in the very early days, the Persians, were masters of the dream.
Masters of the
No
universe.
way to other way to describe it. Then the Greeks come along, and suddenly Plato and Aristotle are talking about the world in a different way, and in some senses a bigger way. But the life of dream still is extremely important and remains so into the early modern period, when it becomes the Inquisition, or the late Middle Ages, when the Inquisition comes along in the West, and people become afraid to mention their dreams lest they be accused of consorting with demons.
Oh,
You could
you
get,
found the problem. This is it. When religion got involved in our dream world, then it was considered taboo to even have dreams, certainly to mention dreams or to reflect on dreams. They were something of the devil, and dare I say, Christianity led this wave of inquisitions, because we see in all of these traditions, and throughout the world, and in various religious world religions, the dreams were very important. Very important. If you look into the Christian Bible, you can find, I think it's like three dozen references to dreams. That dreams were extremely important. David, Jacob, Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, the many, many, many dreams. It's
Well, of course, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar is a very famous dream.
yes.
I mean, can you outline it for my listeners just briefly, or because I can't either.
Not exactly a biblical scholar, but the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, as I recall, was interpreted by a prophet in the Bible and explained to him. There were dreams of pharaohs, there were dreams of kings that were often interpreted by dream advisors, if you will. And in going back to Genesis, it's described that a dream is a profound and connection to God. It is a divine connection to God. And if you look back and you bring up Aristotle, I mean, Aristotle was the one who started us categorizing everything. I kind of blame him for everything.
Yeah, well, he's.
Let's back up. I mean, honestly, in terms of the dream history, Aristotle was a great believer in lucid dreams. He believed that one could actually diagnose illness in a dream, which I totally believe in and practice. And I've tried to teach it in workshops, that one can actually enter a dreamscape and energize yourself to determine what is what. I dare not say diagnose for fear I'll be arrested, but one can determine what might be at the root of one's problem in terms of health, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. And then to energize yourself, to rejuvenate yourself, and then to find a special dream place where one can go to become well. Well, Aristotle knew this, and certainly the father of medicine, Hippocrates, knew this. And they believe that dreams, in addition to being a dream work of prophecy and divine connection and insight, would also be a means of self-healing.
Okay, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty with Vaughn about how do we make this work? When I'm having a lucid dream, I know I'm having a lucid dream, and it's incredibly cool when it happens. Two questions I'm going to ask. One, can I induce this? And two, if I have one, what do I do with it? We'll be right back.
UAPs, aliens, magic, breakthrough tech, psi phenomenon, esoterica, psychedelics, cryptids, time slips, poltergeists, and sundry. The days of dismissing these complicated human experiences as mere delusions, hoaxes, fantasies, and dreams needs to be over. Instead, we need to explore and understand these events for what they might be telling us about the nature of the universe and of ourselves. The ancients taught that we're each an energetic expression of the living cosmos, but we still don't know what that means. What is real? What is fantasy? How do each of our lives and experiences fit within the broader tapestry of being? Are we alone? Where does narrative fit? And what happens when we die? Join me on Neon Galactic, a podcast produced by yours truly, to push the boundaries of old paradigms in science, philosophy, ontology, anthropology, and more. This show is an experiment in radical hermeneutics, breaking down old walls to embrace the strange and existentially transformative, to get beyond old prejudices and realize at last that we are indeed more complicated and connected as a species than many of us ever dreamed. Find me on Patreon, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts to take a journey to unknown places on a quest to the limits of this reality and beyond. At such a fraught and dangerous moment in human history, the time has definitely come to reassess the wisdom of our ancestors and embrace the natural truths we've long rejected. Join our intrepid crew in throwing open the gates of perception to welcome wonder back into the workaday world.
There's zero doubt.
Classified programs exist behind the scenes. We are beyond the realm of speculation.
The U.S. government is operating with secrecy above congressional oversight with regards to UAPs.
The truth is out there. We just need to be bold enough and brave enough to face it.
We're talking to Vaughn Brashler about his book, Lucid Dreaming. Vaughn, you have a website, don't you?
Yes, it's simply Vaughn Brashler website at .com.
Vaughn Brashler website.com. Okay, I have learned, by the way, from long experience, that if I say the guest's website, people, it goes one in one ear and out the other, but I ask the guest, then they remember. So go to VonBrashlerwebsite.com, and you will be able to explore how to interact with Von and how to get involved in, for example, his workshops. I mean, you can do this, folks. This is very empowering. I want a lucid dream. What do I do?
Well, you know, I've reached a point in my life with pets and age and health, frankly, Whitley Lid, I don't do the workshops the way I did.
Oh, you don't anymore. No. I'm so sorry.
So I did. And so I wanted to write this book to show how to program one's own, do-it-yourself, on how to program one's own lucid dreams. And it was based largely on my experience teaching for a short while at the Omega Institute for Holistic Health, where I took a group of people that had never experienced lucid dreaming and in a short amount of time, trained them how to do it themselves and do it really effectively. And it was just amazing that one could actually set up steps to enter a lucid dream. So the steps are not really complicated, but the first step is to actually induce a state of sleep that is deeper than most people experience in their sleep mode. Now, one can go into a lucid dream, even in a daydream, even seated in a chair, even lying on a mat, even reclining on a sofa. I've done it walking, but most people find it more conducive for deep dreaming to actually go and program a dream that would happen during normal sleep time. So what I do is I try to get people trained to get into a deeper state of sleep. Now, earlier on, when I was really fascinated with meditation, I found that most people had a difficulty in reaching a state that was deep enough to be considered a deep meditative state that would actually allow them to enter a state of altered consciousness. So I knew right away that most people were not allowing themselves to get into a deep sleep mode. So I go into this explanation of how to induce a state of deep sleep. And I ended up landing on self-hypnosis. Self-hypnosis where people would, very much like in meditation, consciously put their body to sleep, beginning with their toes, their legs, their torso, their chest, their arms, their head, all the way to the tip of their head. And then finally putting their physical mind, their brain to sleep. This is extremely important. And I found then that most people had a problem, which I call the gatekeeper. And that is the physical mind, the brain, would now not allow people to surrender, to allow your inner consciousness to come forward. In other words, they couldn't enter a state of heightened consciousness because their physical analytical brain, this little pocket calculator that runs our lives, was not allowing them to surrender to their inner consciousness. And so they couldn't enter a state of heightened consciousness. They couldn't enter a state of meditation. They couldn't enter deep sleep. They couldn't enter lucid dreams. So I introduced the concept of harmony that allows one's self to surrender the control long enough for the mind as well as the physical body to enter a state of deep sleep so that the inner consciousness or super consciousness or your inner self to come forward and take you into a dream. Now that in a nutshell is what's involved. Beyond that, I use creative visualization so that people would actually develop an agenda of where they want to go. and what they want to explore in a lucid dream, so that the dream is mapped out. Everybody who has ever planned for a trip anywhere knows you have to have a plan. You need to know what you're going to take with you. You need to know where you're going to go and how you're going to get there. And it's the same with a dream adventure. To set up a lucid dream, you need to have an agenda. So I use creative visualization, but I do this in a different way. I encourage people to have visual drawings or create pictures in their mind of where they want to go and what they want to explore. I think it's important when you set up lucid dream to stop all this analytical thinking, which is only then inviting the physical brain into the process, which limits you. It is, after all, the gatekeeper. So if you picture where you're going to go, rather than think in terms of words or sounds, you're going to get there faster.
You mentioned the physical brain, and earlier you talked about subtle body. Can you tell us what you mean by subtle body, and is that where lucid dreaming unfolds?
Lucid dreaming is possible by the fact that we have an aspect of ourselves, a greater aspect of ourselves, which is more than the physical body. It is the fact that we have an energized body. We have aspects of ourselves which are like luminous or light bodies or energy bodies that exist. One is tempted to say outside the body, like a luminous egg. It's often described as the layers of an onion. But this then is once again a material reductionist way of looking at things, just as we look at the chakra in the body as being vertically along the spine. This has no basis in physicality, because our subtle energy bodies, like our consciousness that resides on all of these levels, is non-physical. So we have to think of it as our connection to the mental realm or the mental aspect of ourself. So as above, so below. So there would be like an emotional level to an astral level of reality. These are actually realms of being, and it is our connection to these realms of being that make the dreaming possible.
We're going to take another break, and when we get back, we're going to ask Fawn, what happens when somebody else enters your dreams?
There's zero doubt.
Classified programs exist behind the scenes. We are beyond the realm of speculation.
The U.S. government is operating with secrecy above congressional oversight with regards to UAPs. The truth is out there. We just need to be bold enough and brave enough to face it.
Where is the unknown country? Is it out there in the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us, in you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. UnknownCountry.com. There's no place like it in the world. Well, Okay, Vaughn, you know the question already. What does happen when someone else enters your dreams? Because I've had that happen many times, and I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners have too.
Yeah, you can actually share a dream with somebody, and it can be set up. What I've done in dream experiments of a personal level is I found that if I have the person like in the same room or the next room, the proximity seems to help. And what also seems to help is if we actually set up the dream so that we actually have an idea of where we're going to go and what we're going to experience. And we set up the dream to begin at the same time and in the same place. In other words, we're simultaneously setting up a lucid dream. So what I found is that we tend to dream in these shared dreams with people that are close to us. They have an affinity to us. They have, kind of an electromagnetic attraction or a karmic attraction to us. There's a definite connection of some form that makes it possible to have a shared dream with somebody who is like a loved one, a sibling, a child, a parent, someone who's very close to us. I think that if someone is a close friend, that is very good. It's going to be easy to set up a shared dream with someone who shares your vision. And so you actually begin the dream and you start the dream at the same time. Now, this can be done with another person. This can also be done sporadically by somebody who is thinking about the same sorts of things that you are and will actually have a dream that takes you to the same place. You will encounter sometimes groups of people that have a shared view of things with you. But you can actually have a group that actually will enter a shared dream. What I find interesting is that you will, in a dream state, often experience people that you know in the dream, or you might experience people that you've seen in previous dreams. These are your dream companions, if you will. And there will be a whole cast of people in your dreams that will recur from time to time. I think a lot of people have had experience with something called the upper room. In the upper room, people will be gathered in a circle, and someone will come out, open a door, stand in front of the group in the middle of the circle, and impart something of a personal importance to each member who's there. But they will then receive maybe a different message, and there will be a different message for each one of them. One thing you need to consider in your lucid dreaming is that it's a non-physical realm, and you're not going to have sound. You're not going to have the same experience with seeing and hearing or any of the five physical senses that are known only to our physicality. But there are opportunities to share dreams that can be extremely meaningful for people who want to share a dream.
Sharing dreams I used to share dreams sometimes with my wife, Anne. And they were often quite a bit of fun, and we would set them up beforehand. But I never knew for sure whether, because we set them up, we were actually just dreaming the same thing separately, or we were sharing. I couldn't tell the difference. Is there any way to tell the difference?
Yeah, I think that for me, the beauty of a shared dream is that you both go and you experience generally the same dream, maybe in a slightly different way, but it's very common that you have a common experience. And the beauty is you can come back from the dream and then discuss the dream and then begin to sort some meaning from the dream. The dream will probably have a slightly different meaning for each one of you or both of you, but there will be some points of comparison. So I think the thing with a lot of dreaming is that people have no frame of reference. It's outside your physical memory. But if you're sharing a dream with somebody, you have a point of comparison and you can come back and discuss the dream, and even then you can expand on the importance of the dream and get something out of it.
How do you have any suggestions about how to set up a shared dream?
Yeah. I think that the best way to do it is that you will recline side by side or very close to each other. You might even hold hands during the dream. It's just a thought. But you want to be very close to this person. You want to actually visualize the same place that you're going to go and what you want to experience. And when I say you visualize it, it doesn't have to be a precise drawing of where you're going to go, but it needs to be like an etch-a-sketch picture of where you think you need to go and what you need to experience. So you have an idea of where and when and what. And then you will have this shared setup in your mind as you both visualize the same outcome or the same destination. So you set up the trip, you set up the adventure, and then you embark on it simultaneously at the same time. And then you, once you get there, need to both orient yourself to the fact that you're there, that you're aware of being in the dream, you're consciously aware of being in the dream, you have conscious awareness of acting in the dream and acting out, and you're empowered in the dream. This is an important aspect of lucid dreaming, is empowerment, and that you're conscious of the other person being in the dream. So you're interacting in the dream, and then you can interact together in the dream. It can be very powerful.
I've had one really vivid lucid dream that I found rather disturbing in this sense. I found myself in a room. It was an office, but it was not, it was more like a home office with a man who I was vaguely familiar to me. I couldn't say that I recognized him. He was sitting there in a chair, not behind a desk, and I could actually walk around in the room. And he said to me, he looked up at me, and he said, "Hello, Whitley."
Yeah.
And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Well, we're just running a check. It'll be over in a minute." Yeah. And then he asked me, pointed to the other side of the room. He said, "Can you go over there?" Yeah. And I walked over to the other side of the room, and it ended. Yeah. What in the hell was going on, Ron? Do you have any ideas?
So I think that, I've had kind of that kind of experience. It is a case of a lot of dream teachers out there that are actually monitoring our dreams, or interacting in our dreams, or assisting in our dreams. And I've long noticed that when I started actually consciously setting up lucid dreams, planning them out, that I wasn't alone out there, that I was going to get some help, and that I would be kind of picked up by, I don't know if they're spirits or what, but I call them Dreamland people. I don't know.
Dreamland people. Yeah.
Dreamland people.
You're actually on Dreamland.
So I'm on. Yeah. So right. I don't know if this is, this could well be interdimensional. You know, if we want to get really down to brass tacks, I don't know what it is. As I say, I have no scientific background whatsoever. I've just simply studied the yoga of consciousness. But I think that there are, let's say, entities or spirits out there that are going to have a certain amount of interest in the fact that you're maneuvering outside your physical limited realm that occupies your daytime hours. And they have a fascination with that. One of my first teachers said, you know, when you begin to wander out there, Vaughn, You know, be aware, be advised. You know, you're not going to be alone. You know, you're going to encounter others. You know, and you know, heads up. You know, he kind of said heads up. You know, he says because it's kind of he described it to me as being in a railway station where the trains don't always arrive on time, and you don't always know where they're coming from. You don't know who's getting on and who's getting off, but you're going to be caught in a mad rush. So I think that sometimes when we enter a lucid dream, we're kind of wandering in on a story in the middle, and we're going to be bumping into people. And I think that we have to be ready for that. But I think that we're completely capable of negotiating in the dreamscape in this fashion, because we are empowered. We do have a conscious empowerment in a dream.
You talk about a blank slate in the book, having a blank slate. How does that work? How do you create that, and what do you do with it?
Yeah, I think this is where it all kind of begins for me. It's where I first set up a conscious dreaming platform, was that I could actually form in front of my mind's eye, inside my head, I could see a blank slate. And when I reached the point where I would tune out my physical mind and I would become completely at rest, I would get to a point where I would see just a blank slate. And to me, that was a consciousness. I call it the great dark pool of consciousness. And out of that darkness, anything could come. I could fill it, see? So I began to write on that slate wherever I wanted to go and whatever I wanted to do. I began to understand that I had control of my own destiny as long as I could begin with a blank slate inside my mind's eye.
That's very interesting. And how do you achieve that blank slate?
You get to that blank slate by totally tuning out the five physical senses. You're no longer hearing and listening and seeing anything. And people will say, well, I kind of like, I'm aware that I'm in the room and I'm sleeping. No, you need to actually get to a point where your body and your physical mind are completely asleep. And at that point, you bring forward your conscious awareness. And at that point, you have the blank slate. The blank slate comes down. And on that blank slate, it's like a big chalkboard. You begin to draw the pictures of where you want to go and what you want to see. And until you can get to that blank slate, you're never really going to be able to achieve direction and where you want to go and what you want to see.
What is the most useful thing about lucid dreaming? Why should we want to do it?
It is personal spiritual evolution. This is my quick answer. I think that there is an aspect of ourselves that is our inner self, the self within. I think for centuries and through different civilizations, we've been aware that there's the outer you and there's the inner you. The inner you is the part you keep hidden, even from yourself. The inner you is your inner spirit. The inner you is your super consciousness. It is your inner light. It is the part of you that brought you in. It's the part of you that keeps you straight. It's the part of you that knows kind of where you're going. And it's the part of you that whispers in your ear. It is your inner self. Your inner self will sometimes allow you to see things when it feels that you're ready for it. And that is when we have these sporadic dreams that we call lucid dreams. Most of us don't know how to set up a dream, but we have them sporadically. And they're very amazing. And since they happen sporadically and we haven't planned them, they're sometimes confusing. And we think that we've seen something very significant. The truth is that our inner self longs to grow and experience and embark on adventures of great discovery. It is the inner part of you that is your champion. It is the part of you that's on the arc of a hero's journey. It is the part of you that wants to break free, embark on a great adventure of self-discovery. And in every hero's journey, the arc of the hero's journey will take you to points of challenge and opportunities and growth, so that we, in the course of this adventure, we will have transformation in our lives, transforming who we are and evolving as a person. It is a part of our personal evolution.
The question of others in the dream, one of the things that has happened occasionally to me, and has many close encounter witnesses describe this also, pardon me, of having non-human beings enter the dream, come yes. walking into it. I've had that happen, and it's really yes. startling. And they seem to be completely at ease in that level of reality. Do you yes. know anything about that? I don't recall seeing anything about it in the book. So maybe I'm going down a road here that you can't go down. But what is your response to that?
No, I'm familiar with your books and to a degree, and I appreciate the question. I truly do. My own experience is that I have encountered things in my dreams that I would call non-human. In my experience, however, and this might be just a case of how I interpret it and how I filter it in my own consciousness, they tend to be animals. I've had a lot of what you call shamanic encounters, where I see animals in my dreams, and the animals will relay information to me non-verbally, of course, since we don't speak the same language. But I find that in my study of dreams in the shamanic world, that a lot of shamans will have gone on spiritual quests beyond space and time, and what we might call dreams, backward or forward in time, and even taught it to others in their community as vision quests. And in these vision quests, people will routinely have animal guides or animal spirits, which will interact with them. Now, I don't think this is exactly what you were saying, but I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. Outside of the physical world, if we can reliably interpret what we're seeing and understand from whence it comes.
When I was a little boy, I had a dog called Candy. She was a little terrier, and we were really close. We were just as that was the perfect boy dog friendship, and we did everything together. She slept at the foot of the bed. We were, as I say, inseparable. And we got to take another break now, but when we get back, I want to ask you about a recurring lucid dream that's very unusual, very powerful, and involves this dog. We'll be right back.
Great.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind, totally new, incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon. Available as a Kindle, hardcover, softcover, and an audiobook read by Whitley Strieber.
There's zero doubt.
Classified programs exist behind the scenes. We are beyond the realm of speculation.
The U.S. government is operating with secrecy above congressional oversight with regards to UAPs. The truth is out there. We just need to be bold enough and brave enough to face it.
We're back, and when I was a little boy, 7 years old, my mother took me out to a place where they had dogs. And they had terriers, little terriers, black and white terriers. And we were looking at the puppies with the idea of buying me a dog. And mother said, "Don't pick one out. Your dog will find you. Mm-hmm. And just stand here." And so I stood there. And soon one of the dogs came up to the puppies, came up and started looking at me, and then raised up and put her paws on the little fence. And mama said, "Here's your dog." And we bought the dog and came home, and I had the privilege of naming the dog. And it turned out she really liked candy. She used to steal my father's caramels from him and then take them under the couch, and if he tried to get them, she'd bite him. She wouldn't let him have them. So I called her Candy. And as I say, my boyhood was very significantly involved with Candy. And in the past 25 or 30 years, the following thing has happened about every 3 or 4 years. I will be sleeping, and I'll be, and this happened when Anne was alive too, and and I find myself stroking Candy, and I sort of half wake up, and I'm stroking Candy, and she's lying there in the bed right beside me, just as vividly as if she was completely physically alive. And I'm thinking, and I think to, I'm enjoying her presence. And, you know, it used to really calm me down when I would stroke her in the night like that. And then suddenly it occurs to me, well, wait a minute, how old is Candy? Yeah. She must be 70. But wait, that, and then she disappears. That's a lucid dream, I think.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is it somehow real? Do you think she's there? Because I do.
Well, I think that, I mean, now that you bring it up, I think that no one ever really dies. You know, we simply go on to another level of existence. And I think in a dream state, we can go there. You know, we're not bound by the laws of physicality anymore. And I dream all the time of my previous pets. And what my experience with this, similar to yours with Candy, is that I will every now and then have a dream where a lot of my cats, because I mostly had cats, will come together, and I'll have a dream with all of them from different times in my life, you know, and one of the cats will always come forward at the end of the dream. This kind of reunion, and kind of impart to me the message that I organized this one. I got them together for you. You know, I think that's so special. I think it's so real, and I think it's so valid. And I think it's, well, first of all, I think my smell test is that it's not something in my memory. Yes, I have a memory of all of these animals that have been in my life, but I have no memory like this. So this is not a relived memory. This is not in my frame of reference. This is no part of my analytical mind. This is something newly created. This is actually happening in real time. This is actual. This is real. I think that we can visit with our loved ones of the past who know no time barrier. They are a part of us. They are connected to us forever.
Is it easier to call like your beloved dead into your dreams than it is to, say, have a shared lucid dream with someone who's alive? And is it, and if you do and you succeed, then what do you, how do you interact with them?
Yeah, I think that they're kind of waiting for it. You know, I kind of wait for them to call me because I don't want to disturb them from wherever they are. But I think once they call to you and they approach you in a dream state, that you have to honor the visit. You know, it's kind of like their call, you know. So
yes.
You let them, you say what they want to say. You know, you're there for them, you know, at least as much or more so than the other way around, and you honor the spirit in which they've come to you.
Now you talk about dream guides. How do you, if you're embarking on a program of lucid dreaming, it would be very helpful to have a dream guide who knew what they were doing. Yeah. How do you call a real dream guide?
So in my experience, when I first started this, it was during a snowstorm on Mount Hood in 1980. And I had a lucid dream and I wanted to continue. And I started embarking on a great study of yoga consciousness and how to set up a dream. And I found out that there were those before me who had done this successfully, and we now call them samadhi mystics or people who practice Raja Yoga. And I wanted a dream guide. And I wanted a dream guide because I had nobody there to help me. I was not a samadhi student. I did not have anyone to train me or guide me in the practice of lucid dreaming. And so I said, you know, the first thing that happens is that I would begin to like arise above the room, and I would become consciously aware that I was free to leave, but I didn't know quite how to negotiate how to get there, and I didn't quite know where to go. And I also felt worried that what if I could get to where I wanted to go, that I would be able to get back. I had a lot of questions. So I was just kind of like the nervous first-time traveler, let's say. And so I said, you know what? I need a teacher or a guide. And I started to once again employ creative visualization to visualize and then ultimately manifest a dream guide. And I began to actually think of what characteristics a dream guide would have. And I pictured a teacher who would actually take me like a student by the hand, take me around and show me things. And finally, ultimately, I discovered that to truly visualize and ultimately manifest something through visualization, one must take one more final step of actually visualizing having accomplished this. Because if you don't visualize accomplishing it, it's not in the matrix. It won't be visual. It won't be reality. It won't be accomplished. So ultimately, I discovered that how to do this. And finally, in one of my first attempts to do lucid dreaming on my own, someone took my hand and directed me. And I had what I called my dream teacher. And my dream teacher said, "Well, you know, what do you want to know? Where do you want to go?" And I said, "Gina, I don't know anything of where I need to go. You need to show me some things." So she took me on a great adventure of things that she thought were important. And I said, this isn't exactly what I had in mind. And she said, what did you have in mind? And she said, until you can determine where you want to go, it's going to be hard to actually have any kind of, lucid dreaming with you. So ultimately, I visualized a dream teacher, and the dream teacher appeared. Now, I think a lot of people have said, well, I magically summoned her. No. I actually visualized her. And I think what happens in visualization is that you send out the thought form, and the thought form actually takes shape, and it actually bounces around the earth until someone says, whoa, someone's calling me. And then someone like that actually receives the message, because it's just simply, communication. There's the sender, the message, and then the medium, and then the receiver. And the receiver gets the message and then tracks it down to the sender, and then said, oh, here, you called and appears. So my dream guide was always out there. I just visualized who it was. I selected someone, and that person appeared. And it, lo and behold, it worked out well, until she said, no, I can't help you. You're kind of hopeless. And she passed me off on another dream teacher. And she said, this is my teacher. He's more patient than I am. And I haven't got the patience to work with you, because you don't really know what you want. And I said, you're right. But she would check up on me, and she never really let go of me. And even though she severed the tie as my dream guide, my dream teacher would occasionally look in on me. Subsequently, I would encounter her when I was working on my Kirlian camera experiments. I would encounter her in the course of a day. And I can report to you that people who were with me actually saw her, and I could get them on your show, and they could testify that they saw her, and they could describe her as accurately as I knew her. Now, the person who ultimately became my dream guide, her teacher, was a bit more obscure, and I would only encounter him by finding him. He wouldn't not come and take me by the hand. He had a different way of operating. I think that there are dream teachers and guides out there, and all you need to do is visualize one, and you will get one.
That's very interesting, because you remind me of something that happened so long ago. I know it was a dream, but it doesn't feel like a dream. It feels sort of like something kind of between dream and reality. And it was that I found myself with a sort of a guide. But the sort of part was that I knew this guide from my childhood. It was my eighth grade school teacher, a nun, called Mother Rose. Mother Rose Gonzalez. And she said, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm not sure. And she said, I thought as much. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me at all. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? She said, you boys, you never can figure a thing out. And that was it.
Yeah. Oh,
no, I remember. I asked her about religion. I'm sorry, but I forgot this. I asked her, what is our religion? Is it true? We were, of course, Catholics. And she said, not as we were taught. And then she disappeared. When we get back, I'd like to talk about something we have touched on but not really discussed, the hero's journey. Those of you on the free side, thanks for watching and listening. Vaughn and subscribers, we'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.